Welcome all together today. You delivered a Soho case study. Thank you so much for doing this. We will have a teaching assistant doing some correction on this and giving you feedback. And Ivan volunteered to present his solution today. And also, I saw that some of you had difficulties with the matrix definition on the level of the likelihood and of the impact, how to define these levels. And that's why I took the same questions for the second part of, or for sheet two of the repetition as we had last time, that we can discuss this in more depth, that you understand it better. And probably first, before we start doing the repetition form, a question to you, whether there are any issues you would like to bring up here at this time. Stuart, do you have anything you want to share? Yeah. Yeah. So the recordings are now structured in blocks from 8 to 10, from 10 to 12, from 12 to 2, and then from 2 to 4, because this was the wish of the NTNU students, but this doesn't change herein, and everything should be recorded fine. I think this is good, and we try even to make some index after the lecture that you can see more. Anything else? If not, then I think we start as usual with the repetition form, then with the discussion. I don't know how much time you use, but some questions is good when you use the book as well, that you go first through and look what you can answer directly, and then in a second run that we see what you can get out of the book, because some questions are probably a little bit tricky otherwise. And we will start with discussion of the repetition form 9, 9, 15, depending on your progress and your feedback. So then we just start with the repetition form, and then afterwards with the discussion, and then the presentation of the Soho case study, followed by the chapter on policies and the chapter on security program. And in the afternoon, Stuart will talk about social technical and rhetorics, I think mainly rhetorics. Very nice. Thank you. And we wrap up around 9. So it would be possible to use Blackboard Collaborate in future. Today I have set up that we do it still with normal recording with the camera. But this would mean that I have to sit more here. Anyway, because of the mic, I have to sit here. And then we could do it like this. So most of the things are quite well readable. Well, thanks. Start. Okay. So I think you are more or less ready for starting the discussion, and we don't need to wait 100% until everybody is here. So we have now 9:05. We start with the presentation. The first question is, there are three community of interest for planning purposes. Mark the correct line. Who has found the correct line? Please. It was for me relatively difficult to make a lot of lines which sound more or less reasonable. I'm also not sure whether it's 100% limited to those which are given in the book. But in the book, which line was outlined? No. It was number 4. This one here. As the correct line. I don't think employee management and outside stakeholder. These are, for planning purposes, the most important one. And the other one are invention of myself, which should sound more or less reasonable. And as said, I'm not 100% sure that those other lines are not good for planning, But it should be between the company, between the management, and between the one which wants something from the company. This is the main thing. Then connect with lines the sentence which fits best to the specific statements. The mission statement is about what we do. The mission statement is about what we do. So the line is between those two. Then the vision statement is in best case, and the value statement, conduct and self-positioning. This is self-explanatory. Then the next one, please connect the left term to the right level of planning. What describes which level? Sorry? Tactical. I would say strategic, yes. And why?
It's technical.
Why is operational? Is technical, yes. And how is tactical? We can go back to the slide which represents this. Just to give you an answer. This is the according slide. So it's slide 13, the answer. Then, which of the four statements is not a tip for strategic planning? So, in the book there are some recommendations for strategic planning, and one is not within this frame. And which line falls out? It's only one. Sorry?
The fourth,
yeah. Even the plan is strategic, it's not necessarily secret. So usually the strategic planning in security is quite open for many members of the information security officer, of the technical team and so on. And some, when it comes to the policy, is completely open. The next one, what is meant in our context, the heartbeat of the company? Why is it that important? So it's number four. This is correct. And yes, and it's important whenever you want to do something in information security, you have to know when it's not in the strategy, in a plan, which is usually done in spring, you have little chance to get budget in autumn, because budget is aligned to strategy, and there must be a very, very good reason to get out of the strategy budget. So then in the following, we were not really going into depth of the models, but I allowed to cite one model, which is the general government of CGTF. And the question is of this five statement, which one is described wrongly, and what is the keyword to remember those? The keyword, I think it's easy. Who has it? Ideal, yes. Initiating, diagnosing, establishing, acting, learning. This would be the right sequence, ideal. And now I tricked one of the description.
Acting,
yeah. What should be acting correctly?
Do the work according to plan.
Yeah. So eliminate weaknesses sounds reasonable, but actually how to do it is written down in the plan, and to self-invent the plan again is kind of not as it should be, because then the diagnosing phase and the initiate establishing phase wouldn't make sense. Then security convergence, mark the correct statement. With security convergence, we discussed last time that there is a hype somehow. And what is the hype in security convergence? The right description. Can somebody exclude one line? Sometimes we have to go by exclusion.
Yeah, the first one, for example.
Yeah, this is not security convergence. It's convergence in geometry, but it's not convergent. Is another line possible to exclude? The second one, yeah, you are right. That's
not. The fourth one, because it's not the. Yeah, the third one is the answer.
Yeah, you are right. The third one is the answer. And why you exclude this number four?
Because it's not just about the security organization.
Yeah, it's about what it is. About physical security and information security, bringing this together in one organization. Then the next one, planning for information security implementation, may mark the correct lines. There are two lines which should be correct.
First one.
Yes. And?
The last one.
Yes, very good. And then the next one is about the system, security system development life cycle, SDLC, mark incorrect statement. And here I wanted that you reflect what security system development life cycle is. And there is one line incorrect. And which one is it?
The second one, because it's only as security.
Actually, I have to say you are right, but the first one is it, yes. Probably I should change the wording a little bit of a is a method to design and implement for the design and implementation of a secure information system. Yeah. Then it's a little bit more logic. Your argumentation was right, but Microsoft Security Lifecycle (SDLC). What is different? It's a security development lifecycle for application security and software security, and it represents methodology how to write secure code. And in 2002, Bill Gates wrote an email, January 17, to the whole staff and stopped the development because they had so many failures, and he was sending, it was said, every programmer into an education for secure application programming. For 2 months interruption of operation. And and it said in this email, whenever you have the choice between functionality and security, you have to go always for security. Stuart, you won't comment?
Just a comment now. This is a huge debate in the field as to what, when you use the term information, where different disciplines in computer science, one is IT systems, one is information systems, or one is an application.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's our problem, because they don't distinguish that much, but in business you do.
Yeah. So for the remote student, Stuart said that application and system, information systems and IT systems are different, and it would be possible to have for IT systems like outsourced to HP and the information system outsourced to IBM, for instance, in Ericsson. Thanks. Let's go to the reflection question. These are the same as we had last time, and I felt that this was not really well understood from the students, from all students. Two or three of you sent me your case study, and I was giving feedback. And the most important thing I write on the blackboard now, we have risk number N is equal to the damage of this risk of N multiplied with the likelihood of risk N. And this could be made 100% correct, that you estimate what is the risk by the damage. When a hard drive fails, it's probably very difficult to say, except if you just have a mirrored RAID 5 system and you can just take the disk out and put the new one in, then you have to loss only the damage potential of the disk, which is a couple thousand kroner when it's a high availability disk. And the likelihood, you have a lot of experience because you have millions of disks all over the world and you could assign this risk very precisely. But what we said last time is that it's a belly feeling. You just make buckets for balls, for likelihood and for damage potential. When you have four steps, like four levels, then you have one multiplied by one is the lowest, and four by four is equal 16 is the highest risk. And you remain to this. And this is a simplification which allows still to work properly, but it's not necessary that you have the very clear figures, because the belly feeling is quite good, and usually when you are insecure you tune with others of the community, or you have a team which is called Delphi method to identify the risk, that everybody contributes to the estimate, and then you discuss back and forward what is the likelihood and the damage potential. And for our case, in the SOHO case study, we discussed last time what is the bucket size of this of the damage potential and the likelihood. So we need four buckets for the damage potential and the likelihood. Does somebody remember what we defined, or what is a good definition willing to give? Okay, otherwise I make my, yes?
And we had defined it in terms of a small scale organization or a medium.
Yeah, this is for SOHO, yes. Yeah. And what is it for SOHO?
For SOHO, damage can be written in the form of money.
Yes. Damage, for instance, smaller 50, then smaller 500, smaller than 5,000, and bigger than 5,000. And the likelihood for a scale might be smaller than 3 weeks, smaller than 3 months, smaller than 3 years, and bigger than 3 years. Sorry? A percentage of what? Percentage relate always to 100%. What is 100%? Really often. 100%. But then you are still in the situation that you have like fine-grained estimates and not buckets. And the bucket is easy to handle because then you have the field, like I showed, a matrix or a spider diagram, which is easy to identify which categories are not acceptable. You can define an acceptance line. This is what is important. Yes, Stuart? Yes, please come. Here is the mic.
So as I say, this is a very good case to start going, and we have different terms in risk management, and you will have a risk management section, but this is from the textbook. One of the things you have here, of course, is the terms we sometimes use is consequences times probability. A probability can be expressed in probability mathematically is 0 to 1. So if you have a probability of 1, in this case, if you're using days here, so if you have a year and it's happening once every 3 weeks, then that gives you a statistic, right? So we won't get into this now, but he's talking buckets, when you're dealing with buckets. The other one, you're going to have to realize that when we do with consequences or damages is here, there are two types of damages. One are concrete damages and one tangible and intangible. So a company has tangible assets and intangible assets. Now, one of the reasons you don't want to mix them up right now is that, of course, mixing up something intangible, which is sort of hard to figure out, with something that is probabilistic, which is hard to figure out. Two wrongs don't make a right in risk management. And that's one of the reasons. We just want to keep it concrete and simple. But don't forget, you have tangible assets and intangible assets. And most companies today, and that's one of the biggest problems, is that most companies, they are intangible. 80% of the company I worked for, Ericsson, were intangible assets. They sold out everything. They don't own the building, they don't own the computers. IT, HP owned the computers. So they're intangible assets, and how you evaluate intangible assets is very complicated, because I'm not... this is a Soho case, it's an easy company. If you go into a small company and you start talking tangible, intangible, and these type of things, it might be difficult. But this is if you're going to deal with the customer in focus. You have to use terminology, etc., that they can associate with.
Yeah.
And it's not a scientific one. If you say the probability is 0.35, it's interesting, but it doesn't help in this. So that's one of the things. Do you agree? You understand what I'm saying now? Like, mm-hmm. So the D here can be D. You could have D T and D I.
Yes.
But as you see, it's going to get very complicated. And the fact is, that multiplication thing is just a function. It could be something else, right?
Not really.
Well, the functions can be different in terms of certain damages have... This mathematical function, it's the standard that they say multiplication, but it doesn't have to be multiplication. It could be other functions.
But it makes sense that you have risk... And yet you have a damage, and you multiply this, how often it will happen, that you can evaluate what it is in Norwegian kroner. So this sounds to me reasonable.
It's reasonable, but then this function here, we don't know if there's a correlation, et cetera, et cetera. So the function itself is man-made. It's guessing.
The parameter is guessing, not the function.
Well, multiply. Why is it multiply?
Because... when you have a likelihood and you have a damage potential per incidence and you can multiply it, then you get statistically a correct statement. This is mathematics.
If the damage is reputation?
Mm-hmm. The damage is reputation, then... The more what I say,
no, the function gets confusing.
it's about the buckets.
Yeah, that's what.
Because
that's why, if you get to the DI intangible, this gets confusing.
Multiplication zero times infinite is the big guess, and this is the super incident of nuclear.
And when you go in statistics, you have this a lot in information security. 80% of small businesses that have an IT attack go bankrupt within 3 years. Amazing figure, isn't it? You know why? Because 79% of small businesses in Norway go bankrupt anyways in 3 years.
Okay.
Right? So people always play with these things, and you as experts should know that they're playing with it, right? It is true. If you look at the amount of companies that start and go bankrupt, look at all the restaurants in Jervik, whatever. They go up and down in a three-week period. I've seen restaurants come here and go in 3 weeks. It's nothing to do with the IT attack. And that's why that function, when it comes to these type of things, is interesting. But the world is not as mathematical as some statisticians believe, right? That's why.
Yeah.
And that's why when you start getting into this, it really gets complicated as to this.
Yeah.
But we don't want to make this complicated. We just want to learn the basics right now, and then we can get later on and how you these things can get very complicated in terms of probability times assets. Because what is something worth, right? And what's interesting, like a lot of times with computers, PCs over the years I've been working, about 1997 in accounting, this computer became a consumer, what's it called again, in accounting? Paper, it doesn't have any value once you get it. So the PC was actually worth nothing once you bought it, just like the paper.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing accounting, you have assets and you have liquid assets and moving assets, etc. So the PC was actually worth nothing as soon as you bought it in terms of the book value, because it became a perishable good. So you buy one, okay. 2 years later on, this PC, even though I bought it for $3,000, next year, in a three-year period, it's worth nothing.
Yeah, it has a depreciation value. And
yeah.
But that does not mean that you can take it home and use it for your children. Sir.
Well, it's interesting, different cultures have different attitudes to way waste should be managed.
Yeah. There is a... But the
whole point is that this is... Yeah, asset management is a huge problem in companies, both in business-wise, etc., right? And how do you... You know, the book value of a company, the goodwill value is a different thing when you're selling the company, etc. These things are fun to play with. But for the... Everything. That's a lot. That's a lot, yeah. And then I spend 80% of my time as a manager just trying to figure out what we got and 20% actually doing work. I'm afraid. Been there. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Good comments. We talked about reputation risk, which is one of these intangible risk. And my statement was also that in case of a health insurer, the sum up of reputation risk, compliance the risk to data privacy, and information security risk is not among the 15 largest concerns of the company. So whenever we talk about it's overestimated from the community of information security officers. And name typical risk you must mitigate in the Soho case study. I think now it's easy for everybody. Just a few one. Yes, sir. Anybody else? You? I noted data loss, virus, internet attack, no password set, no access right set. Malware from? Yes. So software license violation, yes?
Yeah, reputation loss, data loss, privacy loss, compromised network. That can further lead to numerous risks. Hacked devices, denial of service.
So there are many of those. I just made it again to see how we should do it. When you have the risk in buckets, then you have like 10 risk in buckets and you see which one you have to mitigate and which one are acceptable for the acceptance line. Let's go to the next one. Types of organization. What is the difference between a public and private company? Yeah, so a public company has shareholders, and the shareholder representative are the the board members, and they decide on behalf of the shareholder, and everything has been much more compliant. Meanwhile, in a private company, an owner can take risk as he wants. There is no public obligation he has to fulfill, and he can go accept much higher risk than otherwise. And the decision making in those two companies are also completely different. Well, what it is in a private company?
Owner can override
anything. And usually you have very fast a decision, and even if it's the wrong decision, it's the decision, and you know how it is. And in public companies,
the board members that are representing the shareholders take the collective decision.
Usually most decisions are taken on CEO level, and only strategic guidance is from the board member, and the CEO has to follow lines prove that everything is done compliant with law and with shareholder law and so on, and things is much more complicated. Yes?
Can a public company be a state-run company or state-owned company?
There is no limitation that a public company is not owned by state. Usually, like electrical power companies are mostly state-owned and privatized. There are even road companies building roads and tolling those can be private. This has changed a lot. And how much share are sold? This is kind of a political decision, whether it's the minority or the majority. Airports, something to deal with today. And the Chinese buy airports wherever they want when they are public companies. But usually it was meant that such companies are in a majority of shareholders with the state. Does somebody know how Telenor is operated? Is this a state-owned company or a self-standing?
It's publicly traded, but it's semi-private, or it's partly owned by...
Partly or mostly? 51%. 51%, okay.
It's
so
51% in state. Yeah. One day like
okay. This is a typical one. Swisscom, the same. Switzerland, telecommunication. It's a public company, state-owned.
Yeah, Telenor is 54% Norwegian government-owned.
Yeah.
And 5% public shares, and yeah, also owned by DNB.
What is an NGO and a governmental organization? Yeah.
NGO is non-government organization, and it's owned and run by non-government entities.
But our and governmental organization is clearly government. But are all non-government organization NGO?
No.
No. NGO is a term used for? Yeah. It's usually used for non-profit organization like foundations with a content-wise goal to support society. So non-governmental means it's actually in the public interest, but not for money. And they have also different steering mechanism, because usually it's donator money or it's state money given to the NGO to do the job which doesn't fit into the buckets of the federal or the national administration. And what are potential obstacles for organizations in general? Sorry? Legal obstacle, yes. Ethical, conduct, security, all these are potential obstacles. Now, a couple discussion questions. You know, we should also try to refine things a little bit by discussion. Planning versus improvisation. Where is planning superior? Where is improvisation superior? Yes, let me see. Yes, first you, then you. Yeah. So planning, whenever you have time to plan and you know before, it's good. And improvisation is when an incident happens, for instance, and you have to react. And now the bandwidth of improvisation when you have an incident, is this 100% or is it less? The question is each incident 100% improvisation, or is it a combination between improvisation and, yes?
So we can say that every incident is 100% improvisation because a company should predict what incidents should be, what most likely incidents should be. So it, the company or organization should have to take measures before the incident happens, to prevent it or to
act after. Yes. So the first statement is that the manager should have some setup and some plans to manage incident, and there is only a part of it, improvisation. You behind? Yeah. So the second statement is there are frameworks how you handle improvisation, and within this framework you can act with improvisation. Yes?
When an incident has happened, you cannot do anything about it. Then it's partially planning and partially improvisation, because some data or some framework might not be available already for that particular incident. Then we have to go by the instinct or whatever in that situation.
What usually corporations do is that you make exercises and plans for incident handling, and you train specific cases, but the real case is always a little bit different. Then you can go back and look what you can use of the real case, and it's kind of a construction platform, these frameworks, that you can take element from each of these and put it together. So the organizer of civil protection of Aquila earthquake, which was a heavy earthquake in mid-Italy, he said, we Italians are good in doing the best compromise between planning and improvisation. So plan buckets, how to react, and then do the job. And this is partly true, but partly it's also true that they have a lot of money, and that's why they are that good. Because the money for civil protection was directly given from the president and not under normal distribution budget discussion in the parliament. What are the three community of interest? I think we had all these already. Develop a powerful mission statement for NTNU. A mission statement. Yeah?
You dream, we assist.
You dream?
We assist.
We assist, oh, okay. Very far away. You dream, we assist, so we fulfill your dreams. Yeah. Might be, is it very powerful in the international community, in the competition of universities? Other attempts? And it's not a vision, it's a mission statement. So, what do you actually do? Has somebody an idea? Did somebody look it up? Mission statement in the internet? Yes, sir?
Yes, sir, but giving higher education at international level.
High yes. This is a good description. Is it powerful? That you feel very attracted and inspired? Mission statement. Could be better, but it's a very good description. And the place where research turns into innovation, or could be something which is attractive, and education-wise, what would you attract as students to come here? A mission statement. Based on university for the best student. So when you are accepted, you are the best student. Wonderful. Great. This is an indirect prize of the students coming here. I think might be some attraction. But what you actually want to get is the best preparation for professional engineering and research. So we are training best our students to have excellence in research and engineering. I think this feels quite okay as mission statement. And did somebody Google the mission statement of NTNU? Can do somebody this? Because the second is then a little bit more tricky. Did you get an answer? Knowledge for a better world. I think it's also nice. It's pretty much what IEEE has as well. Technology for a better world is IEEE's one. So the next one is the powerful mission statement for the CISO organization for NTNU. So you learned in the book, up to a certain degree, we learned today more about it, that the corporate culture and the corporate context has to be reflected in the mission statement of this, and should be also in the CISO's organization to support NTNU. Yeah.
Committed to ensuring a safe IT environment.
Yeah, could be any company. Doesn't need necessarily to be NTNU. Uh, provide truthful information and protect our strategic asset, which is meant the research results. Before they are public, they have a big value. This could be something which is adopted, that you protect the secrecy of research while it happens, and that you have truthful information, not fake information, into the educational processes. Define a planning hierarchy for a general corporate strategy. Did somebody find this out? This was it relates to slide 14, to this corporate strategy. Then you have the IT strategy, the InfoSec strategy, tactical planning, InfoSec operational planning. And the financial strategy has impact for budgeting, and the operation strategy has impact on what is the objective for the InfoSecurity strategy. So here we can write down, it's slide 14. Then an easy one, GRC. What is meant? Yeah. Governance, reliability, and C for? Reliability, governance.
Governance, reliability, and compliance.
Risk.
Risk assessment and compliance.
Governance, risk, and compliance. And governance defines the company course. Possible events, and compliance assesses. Possible controls, and we had a very nice this one here shows it, governance, risk, and compliance, and here on slide 29 you have the answer. And governance, risk, compliance is like everywhere. This is like the primary acronym in security today, GRC, and limit down to GRC means that you restrict everything to GRC. Okay, then I wanted that you reflect the maintenance model in terms where are risks and where are more compliance issue. What you found out of this one here? What is related to compliance? What is related more to risk? Yeah. Not each one. I think internal monitoring is probably more compliance, and external monitoring the same, because internal and external monitoring are two sides of the coin. One is more fine-grained than the others. And then the readiness and review process, policy review, and so on. You would say this is more risk management. Policy review, readiness and review. Reviews are usually more compliance, I would say. And planning and risk assessment, I would say this is more risks. And the risk threat and attack the database with the vulnerability, this is also risk. But for sure there is a certain interpretation gap. Also in the book, in the next chapter, it's not 100% what I could say, 100% separated risk and compliance. Let's go to risk and compliance orientation and building pair. So the question is oriented towards risk and oriented towards compliance. I have made one pair which should be vice versa. Which is this one?
Data protection officer should be compliance oriented, and anti-fraud manager should be risk oriented.
The issue manager, according to the book. So the line two is vice versa. Data protection officer is for sure a compliance task, and issue manager is more oriented towards risk. Fraud and everything else is in the book associated with compliance.